We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime. Well,
thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hello, I'm Cleta Mitchell. Welcome to our podcast, Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. On this podcast, we talk about everything about elections, how they're supposed to be run, how they're not always run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do to reclaim our election system, which is the most precious and most fundamental part of our constitutional republic. And today, we are so excited to have with us Patrice Johnson, who is from Michigan. I'm going to let you hear all about her. We are recording this at the Michigan Statewide Election Integrity Summit, where we will be hosting hundreds of citizen activists and leaders from across the state of Michigan who are interested in making sure that the Michigan elections in 2022 do not fall prey to the things that happened in 2020. So we're very excited, Patrice, that you came to spend some time with us. And welcome to Who's Counting.
Thank you very much. It's my honor, actually. Thank you very much, Cleta. It's a real pleasure to meet you.
So, Patrice, first off, let's tell our audience about you. Where do you live? Tell a little bit about yourself and your background and all.
All right. Well, I live in Stockbridge, Michigan.
And where is Stockbridge?
It's southeast corner of Ingham County.
Okay. And Ingham County is where?
Ingham County is kind of in the center of the state.
Okay.
It's where the Lansing capital is set. Ingham County.
So you live near Lansing?
Yeah, 35 miles.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right.
Yep. And I grew up in Michigan, and then we lived several years in Washington, D.C.
Oh,
I was
wow.
with the National Office Products Association. I had started a company, the Association for Computer Retailers, and we were acquired, and so I moved out. I was with an association there. And then I was with a data analysis company, IMS, which was later moved to California, and I stayed in Michigan and ended up, at that time we lived in Pennsylvania. So I went to work for a company called Intelligent Electronics and founded a subsidiary called XL Connect that we spun off 10% and it went public on the NASDAQ. So I was very pleased to have helped found that.
And so what would XL, XL Connect, what would that do?
That was a company designed to connect people to the internet, help businesses with websites. This was early stages on the internet. I was actually a proponent of the internet when the chairman of Merrill Lynch had said that it was a fleeting fad that would pass. And I had to convince our management without too much effort that this was really something very important that we needed to participate in.
And it was not going to go away.
It was not going to go away, no. But that's how far back I went with it.
So. Yeah, that's funny. So, so what are you doing now in terms of, are you still working professionally or did you retire or what are you doing professionally these days?
Well, I retired after XL Connect went public on the internet, on the NASDAQ. And then our son died and I wrote a book about his life. And I studied actually with a thriller author for 2 years and then with a narrative nonfiction author for another 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
It took me 7 years to write the book.
Oh, wow.
So I did that and then I started in our town lost its newspaper. So I helped organize a group of people that started a newspaper as a nonprofit, just a bunch of volunteers. And I resigned from there to get involved with Pure Integrity for Michigan Elections. And
start how that. Is that newspaper still functioning?
Oh, yes. About 36 volunteers participate, and it's got a good, strong board. It's doing very well.
Oh, that's great. And it studies reports on local news.
Yes, online and print paper, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's quite an undertaking.
It is a big undertaking.
All right. So tell everybody your relationship to election integrity. What are you doing?
Well, Pure Integrity for Michigan Elections, there were just several of us sitting around the kitchen table after the elections, and we were grousing and doubtful and skeptical and very upset. And we decided, well, this isn't going to do anything. We had to do something. And Kathy, who's a member who was sitting there, said, well, if we're going to focus on something, it better be election integrity, because without that, we don't have anything. So we said, okay, there it is. So I placed a few calls to learn about what we needed to focus on. And Linda Lee Tarver came over and she said, well, if you're going to focus on election integrity, then you need to testify, which means you need to understand your stance on the bills and you need to know about the elections committees.
In the legislature.
In the legislature, the Senate and the House. Mm-hmm. So we took deep swallows and said, okay. So we formed a policy position on where we stood on the various issues. And then
what would be some of those issues, like voter ID?
Voter ID, absentee ballots not being mailed out willy-nilly, basically chain of custody for every ballot. We think it's very, very important that every citizen get involved with the election process, that there are checks and balances on both sides. Up until, we discovered then that really one side of the parties had not been involved.
That would be the Republicans.
The Republicans were not represented. And when you only have one party in charge, basically, the temptation is too great to run roughshod over the rules. And that is what appears to have happened.
So tell us again, the name is Michigan
Pure Integrity Michigan Elections.
Pure Integrity Michigan Elections, PIME.
Right. So
that's great.
The first year we testified in over 30 hearings.
That would have been last year, 2021?
Last year. Yeah. We started in 2021 and testified basically in every election hearing. We have a legislative committee, and when we get word that there's a hearing coming up, one of us copies the bills and sends them out to everybody, and then people send their feedback and we create a written statement and somebody volunteers to go testify. And so then we meet with the senators and House reps and try to get ahead of it as much as possible. We're just in there wherever we can be. I had a person say, Patrice, these pine people, they're everywhere.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
That's exactly what I said. Of course, it's not true, but it's a wonderful concept. It's a great perception to have out there. So we do want to be everywhere.
So you really had never been involved in election law, the election code, or
no,
any of that kind
no,
of thing.
No, no, no.
So that's a pretty big undertaking to understand the election laws. They're not always written so that they're very easily understood.
Well, in Michigan they are.
Are they good?
They are, thank goodness, because none of us are lawyers and none of us had any experience with mm-hmm. this. They're written in very plain English.
Good.
Which is, I mean, it's any citizen can read these laws and understand what they're saying.
Now, have you been exposed to or run across there being a gap between what the law says is supposed to happen and then what happens in real life?
Well, right now we have a real serious issue. Our Secretary of State trains the clerks. Her manuals are what train the clerks.
And the clerks are, well, are they appointed? Are they elected?
They're elected.
And are those the people who are responsible for administering the elections at the local level?
Yes. Michigan is unique in that we have a maximum of 2,999 people that can be in a precinct.
Okay.
So we're very decentralized. We are the most decentralized of all the states, which is a very good thing. And then we elect our clerks, and the clerk's responsibility is to uphold the law and mm-hmm. to represent their citizenry. But I think a lot of times they're intimidated by the Secretary of State, and they're getting misinformation. For example, they're being told—
From the Secretary of State.
From the Secretary of State.
Right.
From in the manual. For example, the Secretary of State says that if there is an absentee ballot and the stub number that is on the ballot doesn't match the number that was recorded as being sent to the person, that they should mark it challenged but then process it. In other words, they are processing ballots. If this were an in-person vote, that would be rejected, no question.
And it should be rejected
under the law. It should be rejected because you should not be submitting a ballot that is different than the one you were mailed.
Yeah, because that does raise some red flags.
It raises a lot of red flags. Yes, that's just one issue. That's just one of them.
So what? So give us an example when you find something out. Oh, let me go back to one thing. So do the people who live in the precinct elect the clerk?
Yes.
So you have a clerk for every precinct?
Well, you might have a clerk that's, for example, in Stockbridge. We have two precincts. It's a small town. And the clerk is responsible for both precincts.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. And who decides how those are allocated? The state or the Secretary of State's office?
Well, I'm not sure of the answer to that. That's a good question, but I know the maximum count is 2,990
people. Voters?
Voters, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so then when you saw this manual, and this manual has incorrect information, so then what are some of the things that you would try to do?
Well, we have volunteers. Louis Avalon has been wonderful. He's the one that discovered this. He took pictures of the manual to document the actual wording. He researched the law. And so we have the statutes in the law that basically specify how these ballots should be treated. And he's created a letter. We've notified both our House and our Senate legislators, and we've sent out calls to action to our supporters to contact their legislators. He has been FOIAing information, and we've been meeting with the clerks and basically trying to get the Secretary of State to change this. So we will keep pushing hard. Because the identity of the stubs is one of the last bastions for election integrity when it comes to absentee ballots.
Yeah, voting by mail. I've become more and more of the belief that all of our 99.9% of the problems that we've seen, that we saw in 2020, and that we're going to continue to see, are from the voting that takes place outside the supervision of the election officials, and outside the ability of citizens to observe the voting.
That's right. There, I think it was in 1969, the Carter Baker mm-hmm. Commission said that the greatest exposure to, I don't know if they use the word fraud, but the greatest risk was with absentee ballots and to minimize them. And there's a strong push to have more and more absentee ballots. And that was because of the COVID pandemic, that was exploited to the max, right. And we need to go back to tighter restrictions.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I Christian Adams and Hans von Spakovsky and I arranged a meeting in May of 2019 to go meet with the top two attorneys for the Trump campaign in 2019 to say, Mark Elias and the Democrats are filing lawsuits all over the country. They're trying to force as much, I'm going to start calling it unsupervised voting, as possible. And we need to do something about it now. And that was May of 2019, before anybody ever heard of COVID. Mm. They had already started doing that. I think by then they'd filed over 100 lawsuits. And when COVID came along,
what an opportunity.
What an opportunity for them to say, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Exactly.
And so they just pivoted and all became, we're doing this because of COVID to protect people's health. I'm thinking, really? So it's more healthy for strangers to show up at your front door to grab your ballot, and that's more healthy than going in a sanitary environment?
Well, and actually, Fauci didn't want to say it, but he did say he didn't see any greater risk to voting absent in person than if you were to go to a grocery store.
Of course not.
People should have voted in person.
They should have voted in person as the law required, but so, when you meet with these clerks, I've always thought that most county election officials or clerks or whatever jurisdiction, they want to do the right thing. They want to do it right.
Oh, yes.
Most of them
Absolutely.
Are trying to do the right thing, but then they get these instructions and all. What is your experience when you and your volunteers go talk to these clerks and show them what the law says and all? What do they say?
Well, different clerks behave differently, of course, but we're organized in Michigan where you have the county clerk and then you have local clerks.
Okay.
And so we've met with a lot of local clerks, and most of the local clerks are very frustrated. One clerk told me that she was receiving every 10 days or every week, 50 pages of changes from Jocelyn Benson right up until a week before the election.
Oh, from 2020?
2020. Extremely frustrating. She said, and she was determined not to throw up her hands in defeat, and she persisted, but there's only so much of that a person can take before they just say, okay, you know, whatever they say.
You know, it would be probably pretty interesting. Have you all made an effort to collect all of those guidance memos that Jocelyn Benson sent out?
No, we haven't, but that's a very good idea.
Yeah, it would be
a very good idea.
Really good to pull those together and show what and just compare what the law said was supposed to be done and any discrepancies between what she was telling people.
Well, one discrepancy you're probably familiar with, they were telling the clerks to have a 6-foot requirement.
Oh, right.
And that was being taught in all the classes. And I don't remember who filed the suit, but the basic premise was they can't do their jobs at 6 feet. You cannot see the computer to verify that the inspector's doing their job.
The observers had to be 6 feet away.
Right. So they were using that as a way of basically
not having any oversight.
Yes. Well, the judge ruled against Jocelyn Benson on that, and she said she was going to notify the clerks that rule did not stand, but she did not. And so it continued to be exploited through the election, which is another problem.
Oh, that's interesting. She didn't tell them that she lost that case.
She didn't tell them that she lost the suit. Now, a lot of people, when they went in, said she lost the suit, but the clerks didn't have that. They didn't have that from their directors. You know, they didn't have it from the county. Mm-hmm. They didn't have it from Jocelyn Benson.
So tell us how many people are involved with PIME.
We have over 1,000.
Oh my gosh.
We started with just, you know, 6 or 8 of us around the table.
Right.
And then
this is 1,000 people statewide?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Michigan.
That's wonderful.
Yes. Yeah. We have people, well, like, for example, there's a lovely lady that said, how do we get this more boards work, more, how do we get taken more seriously by the legislators? And we decided, well, we need to have more face exposure with them. So she is researching every meet and greet that every legislature has on this calendar, and she'll be reporting that at Saturday night's meeting.
And so then they'll give so people will know you should go meet your legislator if the legislator is coming to something or speaking at the Kiwanis.
Or they're just open. That's right.
You should go talk to them and be there. That is exactly right.
Well, most of us, as normal public citizens, have not been paying attention.
That's right.
We were not involved. I would have been mortified at the thought of going to meet and greet with my legislator.
Really?
Yes, I would find that very intimidating.
Really?
Yeah, that just wasn't in my world. You know, it wasn't in my world.
Isn't that interesting?
And I'm sure I'm not alone in that.
No, you're not. You know, I'm a former state legislator. I was a state legislator in Oklahoma for 8 years.
That accounts for your accent.
Yes, that's right. I'm not from Michigan. But so, you know, I just sort of grew up on the political side. And but I will say this. I was thinking about this when you were talking. You know how I decided to run for the legislature? Because I was a citizen going up and watching the legislature, watching them debate certain bills. I was particularly interested in bills that impacted women. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma had some discriminatory laws back when I was in law school, and so we were going to get those changed. And so testifying and all, and the more time, I've told this story many times, the more time I spent sitting in the galleries, sitting in the committee hearings, talking to legislators, the more I thought, I could do this. I could do this. I could do as well as some of these guys. Heck, if I could stay awake, I could do better than some of these people. But so you know what I mean. And you've been around the legislature. And I just tell, you know, I've spoken to groups of people who are thinking about running for office. And I say, if you think you're not qualified, just watch the public access channel sometime of your local city council or school board. And then you'll realize that you are qualified. If you do your homework and work hard and study the law, you will be you're a perfect candidate.
That's right. That is exactly right. Because most citizens, I think, speaking for myself and the people around me, they think of the laws as being something austere and something, you know, something in a different world. But they're very readable. And when you read them, you can see holes in them. And I think one of the worst things that ever happened, one of the best things that happened in Michigan is they have term limits. Mm-hmm. But these people that get elected into office and make it a career, they become corrupted, they become lazy, they stop doing their jobs. Mm-hmm. And the same thing happens when they're terming out. They tune out too. So either way, you have some issues, but it's much better to term out than to have lifetime positions that go on forever.
So tell us about what has happened to some of these bills that you have testified about.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of the bills were very good, and we had Of course, we have offer our 2 cents and our amendments, and a lot of those have been incorporated into as they go through the process. Mm-hmm. And they've passed the House and passed the legislature, and our current governor vetoes them.
Right.
So that's why we have a petition in Michigan that is extremely important, and that is Secure My Vote. Because in Michigan, if you have a petition that contains laws, bills that have passed both houses, and you get enough signatures, 349,000, I think it is, that is veto proof.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And that's how you removed our emergency powers.
Yes.
During COVID.
Yes, that's right. Unlock Michigan. That's right.
So so Secure My Vote. I love it because it's Secure MI Vote.
Right.
Secure Michigan Vote. And so tell us about what's in that bill. What is in that petition?
Well, for one thing, it requires voter ID.
Mm-hmm.
And it also stops anybody but the clerk from sending out absentee ballots or absentee ballot applications.
Good.
Which was a real problem with the
There are these left-wing groups that send out pre-populated millions of absentee ballot applications.
And the third aspect of it is it will stop private monies from coming into governmental agencies, especially elections agencies, which
so,
the Zuckerbucks.
So there's the deadline, I guess, is June 1st for turning those in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea how they're doing?
They're doing very well. I just talked to Jeff Litton this morning, or we emailed, mm-hmm. and he said he's very optimistic. He will be here at the show, by the way.
Yes, and I did invite them to come and bring a table, make sure that everybody is signing those petitions and that everybody takes the petitions and gets others to sign them. Put that on the ballot for
Absolutely.
November.
Actually, it won't have to go on the ballot.
Oh,
if they get the signatures, the legislature can pass it and it is law.
Oh, wow.
That's the beauty of this.
Oh, this is the one? That's even better.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
I like
that. I don't know if it's completely unique to Michigan, but that is within Michigan law that doesn't happen in other states.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you've testified at legislative mm-hmm. hearings and before the legislature. You're getting to know your legislators, hold them accountable. They know you, they're local, your voters, they want to please you. And then, and you're working on the Secure My Vote.
Yes.
Now, what else are you all doing?
Well, we have an ERIC committee. It's very active.
Tell everybody what ERIC is.
ERIC is the Electronic Registration Information Center. And it was founded by George Soros,
yes.
and I think 2011, 2012.
Right.
And David Becker is a very active person within the organization. And he was behind the Zuckerbucks movement.
Right.
It's a 3-employee nonprofit organization registered in Delaware. And they take the data, the voter registration data and Department of Motor Vehicle data from 30 states and rummage through it to basically, it's supposed to be cleaning the voter rolls, but it's not. It is a covert method of registering targeted voters. And we believe it's tied in with Sensing, which is an artificial intelligence program developed by an IBM person. So it's like Zuckerbucks in that Zuckerbucks in Michigan went 90% to Democrat areas. And that's what we believe will be happening, is happening with the ERIC. Because in the ERIC contract, I know it seems hard to believe, but the Secretary of State is responsible for contacting 95% of the people on the list that ERIC provides them. And ERIC will not say anything about the algorithm it uses to pick those voters. And it will not say anything about anything. If you want to know anything about ERIC, you have to get a court order and have somebody walk in there with it in order to get the so it violates Freedom of Information Act.
Well,
completely.
It also violates federal law. And ERIC, let me just say this, I was so thrilled to hear that you were working on this. ERIC is a very insidious organization, and our tax dollars of all those states are when states join, they pay millions of dollars
yes.
to join. And
$25,000 to join, and then up to millions of dollars for
right.
for the report.
And all of their money, ERIC's money, comes from taxpayer dollars.
Yes, our taxpayer dollars
are funding this. Right.
That's right.
And so I chair an organization called the Public Interest Legal Foundation, and PILF has sued, I think, either 3 or 4 states for their refusal to turn over their list maintenance, their voter roll maintenance records. And they say they cannot turn them over because they belong to ERIC,
Which
and
prohibits
Eric
them.
Prohibits it. But the federal law says, the National Voter Registration Act says, that all list maintenance records and voter records are public records. Now, the left is trying to change that, by the way.
They, yeah.
In their H.R. 1 and S.1, those bills that we fortunately, with the help of people like you and all over the country, we were able to stop.
And Joe Manchin.
And Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema to stop those bills from becoming law. But one of the things they would have done is they would put the voter registration records, the voter rolls, behind closed doors, inaccessible to the citizens. So I'm just thrilled that you are working on, Eric, and we want more citizens to say to their legislators, do not continue your membership, withdraw their membership.
And immediately.
Immediately.
Louisiana has done that.
Yes, Secretary Kyle Ardoin, yes. I want to give him a shout out
because
I actually talked to him this morning. He's a good friend of mine.
Good.
And I just always praise him, and we need to praise him because he's the first Secretary of State in the country who said, I'm suspending our membership in ERIC.
Due to allegations of fraud and something else.
And he says, and because they will not, because they're not making things available to the public. But, and of course, they've gone after him. David Becker has had a press conference attacking him. David Becker's a very bad person in terms of his background. He was at the Department of Justice as an attorney at the Department of Justice, very left-wing. And literally when the Department of Justice had sued the Boston Housing Authority, I think it was, for discrimination, he called the Boston Housing Authority and said, I'll help you all. And he was feeding them, the adverse party, he was feeding them information. But so are you all involved in turning out people to be poll workers and
yes.
Election officials? Tell us about that.
Well, in Michigan, there's the election protection team that was started by Matthew Seyfried. I believe he'll
yes.
be here. He's done a phenomenal job.
Yeah, yes.
And he put together this program, and they wanted to recruit 5,000 people to be available as election inspectors. Now, election inspectors are particularly important. In Michigan, you have the inspectors that actually feed the ballots through. You have poll challengers that can stand close and observe. And then you have poll watchers that have almost no authority.
Yes.
So the ones with the most authority are the election inspectors, because they can say, this is not right. This is stopping.
This number doesn't match this number.
This has to stop right here. And they can shut the place down right then. And that's what we need. We have to have people in place that can say, this must not stand.
And so do you have a lot of your members of PIME who have signed up to be election inspectors?
Yes, I believe
so.
Fantastic. We've been pushing them off pretty hard. And actually, people are very happy. If they know what they can do, they want to do it. They just need to know what to do.
I contend that this is a lot like parents waking up about school boards.
Oh, yes.
Realizing
yes.
they thought everything was fine. They left it to the school board. They might vote for school board, but then they really didn't pay much attention. And now people are saying, wait a minute, we don't like what's going on in the school board and the school board curriculum. There are all these forces that are pushing things, and local school boards, they're volunteers and all, but the professionals, oh no, we have to do this. I think the same thing has happened with the election system, where most of us, we go vote, but we aren't really going to the election board meetings, or we're not paying real attention to any of that. But
no.
you have done it. That's the thing. It's what's so wonderful. You and the people around your kitchen table and your 1,000 volunteers, which I contend will just grow
yes.
as people see what they can do. And it just brings tears to my eyes to think of, I know how much hard work this is.
It's a lot of hard work. That's true.
But to me, it's about saving our country. And
it
I think
is.
that's what I found with all the volunteers across the country who are so interested in this. They're trying to save their country.
I think the lights went on and we realized we might lose our country.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I was researching this just recently, but Lyndon Baines Johnson, I think it was 1948,
yeah.
he lost or won a Senate race, and one of his things he was quoted as saying, and I'm going to botch the quote, but, there must be more dead people out there who can vote. and then it went from there. When Obama was elected, he brought Chicago-style corruption to Washington.
That's right.
And since then, we've gotten to the point where Zuckerbucks was a private entity funding, making government basically recruit biased voters.
Right.
And now you have a situation where you're going to have taxpayers funding the corrupt, biased recruitment of voters.
Yeah.
That is totalitarianism.
Yes, it is.
That we're headed toward. And well, I think everybody realizes that.
And I just saw this week that the Chinese communists put up a candidate in Hong Kong to be the mayor or president of Hong Kong or whatever, and he got 99% of the vote.
Of course he did.
That is what the left wants to do here. But Patrice, thank you so much for all of your work.
Thanks to all
of your volunteers. And thank you for joining us. And thank you for joining us. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell is a podcast produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute and our Election Integrity Network. We hope that you will share it with your friends, subscribe, and let's all get involved to save our elections. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, and to become part of the Election Integrity Network.